Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please. To John Rothstein, please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast being brought to you by our good friends at Geico. Did you know there is a quick way you could save money? Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to Geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's Geico. And as I was planning this podcast on Sunday, there was a number of different ways I was going to go when I thought about my big picture thoughts from the weekend. I could have went, obviously, with Kentucky's big-time road victory at Louisville, which reiterated that the Wildcats have taken a step and have better role allocation since Quade Green opted to transfer to Washington. I could have went with a controversial finish in the St. John Seton Hall game on Saturday night. Or I could have went with what was going on with the Pac-12. And that directly brings me to what's going on in the Pac-12, and that's directly correlated to UCLA. Because UCLA is the flagship program in the Pac-12, along with Arizona, and news trickled down on Sunday that Steve Alford, the head coach who has done a good job at UCLA, would likely not be returning. This is the one thing I've learned in covering college basketball about UCLA, and it's a term that coaches use and people use in all forms of sport, but it exists more at UCLA than anywhere else. When you're hired, you are truly hired to be fired. And I'll give you a perfect example. You look, think back right now to the past couple of coaches at UCLA. Ben Hallen, three Final Fours, won the Pac-12 his last season, beat Arizona three times his last season, fired after losing in the NCAA tournament. Steve Lavin, five Sweet 16s in 7 years. When Steve Lavin was fired in 2003 by UCLA and Ben Hallen was named head coach, his replacement, he invited Coach Hallen to dinner. And they went out and they had drinks on the water and they talked about UCLA, and Steve Lavin tried to do everything he could to educate Coach Hallen on UCLA. And he said one thing you have to remember: as good as it's going to be in Westwood, as high as the highs are going to be when you win big games, someday it's going to end. And Coach Hallen, who was coming off a couple of great wins at Pittsburgh and a couple of great seasons at Pittsburgh, where he led Pitt to the top of the old Big East, was obviously confident that he was going to do a great job at UCLA. And he did do a great job at UCLA. But towards the tail end, when the momentum started to shift in the other direction, and even after 10 years, the longest head coach that UCLA has had since John Wooden passed, we saw Ben Hallen, after three Final Fours and a Pac-12 championship, be asked not to return. And I think one thing we're looking at with Steve Alford is he's somebody who was hired in 2013 after a great run at New Mexico. It was a run that ended with a very, very unfortunate loss to Harvard in the NCAA tournament. And he is in a scenario where he all of a sudden has to look at the fact that three Sweet 16s in 5 years is just not going to be acceptable at a place like UCLA. So I want to point out this. When you think about UCLA and you think about why people aren't having more success, a lot of people always go right now and look at the recruiting rankings and say, well, they're recruiting well. How can it not be better? I've said it on this podcast. I've said it on many different forums and many different mediums. Returning players always usurp incoming players in college basketball. And unless you're bringing in R.J. Barrett, unless you're bringing in Zion Williamson, you are not going to be able to transcend things with the talent you have. Steve Alford has had three great point guards the last 3 years. Lonzo Ball, Aaron Holiday, and now Jalen Hands, in terms of their overall talent and the cachet they arrived at campus with. But Steve Alford has also had three different point guards the past 3 years. It's very difficult to have roster continuity, chemistry, rhythm, and have a winning program, even if it is UCLA, when you have that much roster turnover. And that's something that can't be denied. And I want to point this out right now. Ben Howland, 10 years at UCLA, fired after three Final Fours and a Pac-12 regular season title and three wins over Arizona. Steve Lavin and Steve Alford, multiple Sweet 16s during their tenure, asked to leave after 7 and 6.5 years, respectively. So my point is this, and we're going to kick this around, obviously, over the next couple of months. You're going to hear different names, obviously, linked with the UCLA job, and you're going to see a lot of different things about why it's such a great job. I don't think you are going to see anybody with a stable situation at the power conference level in college basketball opt to leave that type of a state and that type of a situation to go work at UCLA, where you have to deal with a lack of charters, where you have to deal with a conference right now in the Pac-12 that looks like it has a legitimate chance for the first time since the 11-12 season to get one team in the NCAA tournament. Because after Arizona State's loss to Princeton on Saturday in Tempe, you can make a legitimate case that the Pac-12 is going to be a one-bid league in 2018, and at most it's going to, it's 2019, and at most it's going to be a two-bid league. So when you add all that up, what coach is going to be in a situation where he says, you know what, I'm winning here, and I'm in a power conference, but I really want to go to UCLA? Is there a lure? Absolutely. Is there pressure? More than most can imagine. Because the hot seat starts as soon as you have your press conference. And, like Steve Lavin learned, like Ben Howland learned, like Steve Alford now knows, as good as you're going to have it when you're driving to work in your convertible and when you're having massive wins at Pauley Pavilion and elsewhere nationally, it's going to come to an end. Steve Alford had a player in Lonzo Ball on a team 2 years ago in UCLA that was as gifted an offensive team as we've seen and I've covered in 10 or 15 years. Less than 2 years later, out of a job. Not going to be asked to come back. This is what you're dealing with at UCLA. You don't deal with that at Harvard. And that is something our next guest will fill us in on, how things are on the other side of collegiate athletics. Harvard visits North Carolina this week. We check in with the aforementioned head coach of the Crimson, Tommy Amaker, coming up next on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Harvard will take center stage this week as the Crimson will travel and play North Carolina. And the head coach of the Crimson is Tommy Amaker. He joins the College Hoops Day podcast with John Rothstein right now. And coach, it's been an interesting 11 games for your program. How would you describe the season so far?
Well, John, you hit it on the head. It's been a little disjointed for us, but, you know, everyone's dealing with different kinds of things, whether it's injuries or teams being up and down and parity in college basketball, and thanks again for having me on. It's just a pleasure to be on with you and be a part of your podcast. So, but hopefully, you know, our team is we've made some strides and we're trying to gain some rhythm. And it's not those things you need when you have to go to Chapel Hill and play UNC, and then you still need to have them not play well. So we're hopefully have those things intact.
You know, Coach, I was in Cambridge before the season watching your team work out, and the feeling within your program was that when practice officially started, both Bryce Aiken and Seth Towns, two of the more talented players in your program and in the Ivy League, were going to be cleared to play. They haven't played, obviously, up to this point. Are you planning to have them back in the fold this season?
You know, John, it's we would certainly hope so, but I'd certainly stay out of the whole medical training, you know, area. I just ask them to tell me when they're ready, and you know, no pressure or anything on our end. And we just you know, we were hopeful that they would have been back sooner than now. Certainly, as you said, at the beginning of the start of practice, but just not the case. And so we're just waiting. When they're ready, we'll have them. And until then, we'll just, you know, have the other guys and keep plugging along.
Did anything change from the initial prognosis that you guys felt in the preseason?
You know what? No, it's just, you know, things take a little longer sometimes than you anticipate, and those guys are doing the best they can and going through that process with trying to with the treatment and the rehab, and we just kind of, you know what, they'll be ready when they're ready, and if they're ready, we'll certainly welcome them back with open arms.
Now, this isn't the first time that you've had a fragmented roster since you've been at Harvard during the 2012-13 season. You lost two players, Brandon Curry to Kyle Casey, for off-the-court things, and you told your team, we don't have what we had, but we still have enough. Does Harvard still have enough without Bryce Aiken and Seth Towns as currently constituted to win the Ivy League?
We do. We certainly do. We believe that. You know, it's a different time and different players, but we certainly feel the same way, that we think we have enough, and finding our rhythm and getting some traction and gaining confidence. And, you know, our program is in a different place than it was a few years ago. During that time, we were able to still kind of, I think, the better way of saying that is sneak up on some people. That's not the case anymore with us, regardless of who we have suited up for our program. But those are good things. But I do think we have enough, and I'm pleased with the growth and development of our freshmen. I think they're giving us a lot, you know, as we're plugging along and getting to the new year here. And so we think that, you know, if we can have it mesh right and gain rhythm and confidence here along the way, you know, we think we'll be a factor.
You know, Coach, the big thing to like about your roster right now is it's a roster, especially with Aiken and Towns hopefully eventually getting healthy, that's set up for a two-year run. If they were to join the pieces that are currently playing in your rotation now, where does the talent base of the roster stack up among the best you've had at Harvard?
Yeah, you know, if we have all of them, you know, suited up, lined up, and all healthy, I mean, I just think we'd probably be as deep as we've ever been. But that doesn't mean that we'll be as, you know, as good as we've been. You know, those things, chemistry and, you know, roles and, you know, luck along the way and, you know, different pieces all have to kind of factor in and to fall into place for you to have those kind of really, really special years that we've had in the past. But I do think as this particular team, we have the prospects of being as deep as we've ever been. And that's very exciting and tantalizing to have an opportunity to eventually at some point, hopefully, to have that at your arsenal.
Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Crimson 6-5 on the season. We'll play North Carolina in Chapel Hill on Wednesday night. You know, when you were an assistant coach at Duke, Mike Bray, who's now the head coach at Notre Dame, was also an assistant at Duke. And, you know, he had an interesting saying. I was at a Notre Dame practice a couple years ago. He said, depth is overrated in games and it's underrated in practice. As much as you want to stock your roster with as much talent as you can, when you have as many good players as you do, does it make it harder to develop the rhythm and chemistry that great teams have when you have more than a handful of players off the bench that can come in and affect the game?
It can. It's no question about it. But we've been a believer in developing our depth. I mean, I think everyone has depth. You just choose to develop it. I mean, you know, you have a roster. I mean, you all have choices to make in terms of how many players you want to play or whatever your philosophy is. And I think all teams, you're supposed to have depth. That's what we're here to do. And part of our process of being college coaches and you know, what we're, you know, paid to do and our jobs to do is to try to create that depth. I mean, when you look at football or, you know, great teams, I mean, they talk about that all the time, having depth, you know, it creates competition in practice. It keeps kids on edge, I think, which can be a very good thing. But then being able to coach to that, you know, being able to utilize that. We've utilized that in the past, and it's worked really well for us. We believe in that. We believe in bench and balance. Those two words for us are big in our program. And when we've been at our best, we've had those two words to play prominent roles for us. Our bench and our balance. And we're hopeful that that will kick in for us as we move into this new year.
There were different phases that you tried to attain when you took the Harvard job. Upstart, contender, winner, champion, dynasty. Why, with all the rungs on that ladder, has dynasty maybe been the hardest piece to maintain?
Well, I think that's that could be, if you ask anyone who's probably been along this trail in any capacity at some point, they have probably looked at that part as being the hardest to sustain things, to continue the excellence that you've been able to attain. I mean, that's a hard pill to swallow. It's hard to gather that, garner that, and to sustain that. I think anyone will tell you that. And that's probably the most satisfying part of it as well, too, if you can sustain things. I mean, you know, we've been able to kind of break through. We've had some success to, you know, do this or do that, or get to the tournament, win a game, or, you know, different things that come along the journey. But to maintain that level of excellence and consistency, boy, that's hard. And you know what? We're in the midst of trying to find our way with something like that. But we're still very hopeful and very optimistic that, you know, that's an area that we will be able to strike as an area that we've been able to accomplish.
Well, you know, you brought up the word opportunity, and you maximized opportunities in the NCAA tournament in 2013 and 2014. And coaches, though, always seem to remember the losses more than the wins. In 2015, you had the ball against North Carolina in the round of 64, down by 2 points and missed a three at the buzzer. Do you look back at that game and remember that loss, having a chance to beat a team and a brand like North Carolina in the NCAA tournament, maybe more so than the time you advanced?
Well, you do. Unfortunately, that's what happens with coaches and with programs. You do generally think of those moments of the near misses or the opportunities that maybe you feel that got away from you that could have been, you know, monumental moments. You know, and that's fair. I mean, that happens. And I'm mad at you for bringing it up, because I wasn't thinking about it until you just chimed in with that. But yes, and obviously with a historic, iconic program as UNC, and, you know, we had a wonderful game against them. We were very proud to have an opportunity to compete against them, as we will coming up here in a few days. So it's just, but you're right, those moments can be game-changing, can be, you know, program-defining. And we've had some, you know, along the way, but that was one that would have been as big as any that you could possibly ever think of with our program, our school, and certainly our conference.
Well, you are no stranger to Chapel Hill, where you will lead your team on Wednesday. You obviously had a great career at Duke before becoming a coach. I'm curious, though, right now, what are the feelings for you entering North Carolina? And when you think about that program, everybody associates you with Coach K, but you're always somebody who's, you know, had an affection and affinity for great leaders. So what are the feelings that you have this week taking your team to the place where Dean Smith coached and you once played?
Yeah, it's an honor. I mean, that's the first word that comes to mind with me, recognizing how great that program and that brand is. And certainly you mentioned Coach Smith, who's, you know, just an iconic, iconic man, iconic coach, stood for so many wonderful things, you know, within in and out the world of sports. And so an honor to have our program, our team, to play there, to compete there, and hopefully we can, you know, do ourselves justice by, you know, representing our conference and our school, our institution, our program the right way. And but as you mentioned, Coach Williams, with his name on the court, you know, the national championships that he's won, and known him for such a long time, and so competed against him through the years. And just you feel an honor about it, but also there's a great deal of respect and. Because they have done things as we did at Duke, and you always do that, that fierce rivals, but certainly the greatest amount of respect for one another because of the way in which both programs were run and how much they competed and certainly won. But the way that they did it, I think, was always gathered, you know, as much as any kind of talk and respect by others from the outside. And we felt that way consistently, obviously, about UNC. And I'm quite sure they felt that way about Duke.
Well, you know, this type of an opportunity is something that you always get in the ACC. But when you're in the Ivy League, it stands out obviously much more. And this is also a showcase for your program to showcase some of your better players. And, you know, one of the things that happened to your team since you had some injuries was other players got a chance to get more minutes. And the biggest guy that stood out to me when I watched your team practice was a freshman wing, Noah Kirkwood. And he very quietly here in the last couple of weeks has went on a tear.
Where does Noah's talent for a freshman rank versus some of the other talented freshmen that you've had during your tenure in Cambridge?
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that. And quite honestly, John, as good as any. To hit the ground running as he has. I mean, it's just, you know, we've had some other really good players, as you know, and propelled us to amazing heights within our conference in the last 10 to 12 years that we've been here. But he ranks as high as any of them at this point. And his feel, you know, his passing, you know, really what separates him, his vision and his passing, it separates him from a lot of guys, you know, at his age and his level. I'm very, very proud of him. I'm not surprised. You know, we recruited him to be in this position, and we thought of him as this kind of player, impact guy at the highest level, we felt. And so, you know, I'm not surprised at it. I see a lot of other kids, you know, in terms of Canadian backgrounds and, you know, getting talked about and deservedly so, rightly so. Just I'm happy that maybe Noah can – we have his name in that mix with some of these other great players that people are talking about in college basketball around the country that are playing well from Canada. We've had our share, and I think this kid is as good as any we brought in here from Canada, as good as any we brought in here as a first-year player.
Tommy Amaker joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Harvard 6-5 will face North Carolina in Chapel Hill on Wednesday night. We had your friend, mentor, and coach on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, Mike Krzyzewski, and he was talking about how he was proud of you for a lot of different things, but most recently, how with the job you've done at Harvard in terms of elevating the Ivy League's overall talent, not just your own program, but the overall league itself. From your perspective, how has the league changed when you look at the talent base now around the conference?
Well, you know, it's great that you've had Coach on. I mean, there's no one better than him. I think you know that in every way. I'm proud to be a part of his group and be one of his guys and to have played for him and worked for him. And he means everything to me, and I'm just I'm glad to see that, you know, he is doing what he's doing. It's inspiring for all of us, not just in basketball and coaching, but all walks of life to see how well he's doing what he's doing at the very young age of 71, I think he
71,
is.
And so, yeah.
71. I mean, it's amazing, and I just marvel at it, and he continues to inspire me. So. I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm proud that feels that way about me. And so when you mentioned about our league and our conference, I mean, we're in the middle of it all the time, and I've heard others kind of make statements similar to that about the elevation of our conference within the last 12 years. And it's wonderful to think that we've played a role in that. You know, our league is very good. I think our league is starting to get that recognition that we've known we've deserved for a conference. The last, I would think, you know, 5 to 8 years that we think we've been that kind of league that, you know, from top to bottom, that it's competitive. It's you know, we're loaded with different, you know, styles of teams. We have tremendous amounts of talent, you know, across the board in our conference. And I think the coaches have done an absolutely fantastic job. This has always been thought of as a high-level coaching league. I think when you're outside of this conference through the years, you know, coaches in our profession have always thought of, you know, Ivy League coaches have been outstanding teachers and coaches. And I think that's true. And I'm proud to be a part of it and hopefully to be thought of as one of those kinds of coaches. But it's wonderful to think that, you know, Harvard basketball has played a role in helping the Ivy League, you know, become nationally relevant as a league, as a conference. And not just, as you know, through the years, it was always thought of as, you know, Princeton and Penn, or Penn and Princeton, and everyone else. I think those days are certainly gone, and those two teams and programs are as strong as they've ever been. And but we have others now that you know are in the mix for our league, and I think will be for the foreseeable future.
You know, Tommy, you told me several times that, you know, one of your dreams is to have the opportunity to win multiple games in the NCAA tournament and then have 4 or 5 days between games to promote your program and the brand of Harvard. That's something that is going to be obviously easier to achieve if you land more talented players. And you recruited a pair of one-and-done prospects a couple years ago, Mo Bamba, who went to Texas, and Wendell Carter, who wound up at Duke. Is it easier to recruit players of that cachet moving forward now that they can look around the league and see that Princeton was able to win at Arizona State, or Brown was able to dominate San Diego State, or Yale can dominate Power 5 teams? How much will this around the league and the league's success add to your pitch when you go into five-star prospects' living rooms moving forward?
Well, I think it adds for all of us. You know, you mentioned some amazing wins by our league and a fantastic job in our conference, Penn over Villanova. I mean, just a number of different, marquee moments this season that you've seen. And I think that's just bodes well for our conference. I think it's going to allow all of us, to make sure that our league is viewed as a high-level league in our own right and certainly at our level. You know, we're not a Power 5 conference, of course, but we are a conference that, we really think that we have some high-level teams, and I think we're showing that. We're getting some high-level talent, and we're showing that. So I think for all of us it's going to help, and hopefully for the brand of Harvard that we can present and provide opportunities for kids and families to take a look at and what we've been able to do as a program through the years. We're hopeful that this will allow them to think that they can get it all. You know, they can have those kinds of basketball athletic moments and opportunities as well as what we can provide beyond that. And so we're, I think as a whole and as a group, we're looking at that as a huge plus for all of us. And we think that it's going to help all of our programs and our teams to even be more successful on the recruiting trail.
Final thing, Tommy, you have a saying on your campus, anything can happen. What needs to happen, regardless of the personnel you have, for Harvard to have a chance to return to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 4 years?
Well, John, it's we do say that, and it is very much believed, on our campus, in our community, because we've seen magical moments happen throughout, our campus and our community. And with the brand of Harvard and the platform, that we can have, we can bring, does it ignite things. And it's a very powerful, as I say, a very powerful pull Harvard brand is. And, to have things go our way, as I think anybody that's had magical moments happen. I mean, you need to be good and you need to be lucky. So we're hopefully doing our part to try to become as good as we can become. But you also need to have a little good fortune bestowed on you. We need to have, we were fortunate enough to attend Ebenezer Baptist Church here in Atlanta, where Dr. Martin Luther King and so many others, would call home. And we were able to kind of have the very good fortune of being there, and former President Jimmy Carter was there, and he was gracious enough to, want to meet with, say hello to our team and take a picture with Harvard basketball. And it's all of that. So that's a little bit of luck or blessings. And so we need that. I'll say it. It's not hard to try to capture, what's necessary, which is to be good and to be lucky.
Well, Tommy, we appreciate a couple minutes. Know how busy you are. Good luck against North Carolina and, of course, throughout the rest of the season. And look forward to staying connected along the way.
John, thank you so much. And great to be on your podcast. And great job with the work that you do and you do for college basketball. And it's very meaningful, and we certainly all appreciate it. Thank you.
We'd like to thank Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question right now is going to be from Joe Salito. And it's, John, how far do you think Seton Hall can go? Look, Seton Hall has continued to surprise me under Kevin Willard, been sensational in the non-conference portion of the schedule. A big one over Kentucky. Seton Hall right now looks like a team that would have to play their way out of the NCAA tournament picture. Our next question comes from Mark from Gastonia, and it's, John, what do you think North Carolina is missing this year? For me, North Carolina needs to get its best players on the floor. Last year, we saw them go with a smaller lineup with Luke May at the five. I'd be curious to see what happened in North Carolina if Luke May went to the five and Nasir Little went to the four consistently. Get their five best players on the floor. And our next question comes from Clark Beckwith, and it's, John, realistically, what's the least amount of bids the Pac-12 can get in the 2019 NCAA tournament? Realistically, one. One bid is a very realistic situation. If Arizona State, which has performed the best out of all the teams in the non-conference portion of the schedule, wins the Pac-12 tournament, I think the Sun Devils could be the lone representative for the Pac-12 in the 2019 NCAA tournament. Let's get this Nuggets.
Five good Nuggets.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one, ringing out the sponge. Chris Holtmann's two-year combined record in November and December at Ohio State, 23-5. Not many guys ringing out the sponge like that guy. Nugget number two, a mid-major to watch. Western Kentucky could go to the Sweet 16 or lose in the first round of the Conference USA tournament. The Hilltoppers have now beaten West Virginia, Wisconsin, and beat Arkansas at Arkansas. Nugget number three, the Zags are getting healthy. Mark Few telling me on Saturday that Killian Tilly and Geno Crandall, still both not fully cleared, but trending towards returning for the WCC opener against Santa Clara on January 5th. Nugget number four, an SEC gem. Eric Holman's last three games for Mississippi State, 19.7 points per game, 8.3 rebounds and three blocks, 8 of 15 from three during that stretch. Think another Robert Horry. Nugget number five, patience is a virtue. More ADs need to do what Seton Hall Athletic Director Pat Lyons did with Kevin Willard. It took Willard a couple of years to get things going, but now Seton Hall, a perennial NCAA tournament contender. Now, let's get the games to watch brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Games to watch. Games to watch.
Tuesday, Marquette at St. John's, Marcus Howard against Shamari Ponce, who really needs bowl games. Wednesday, Nebraska at Maryland, Oklahoma at Kansas, Northwestern at Michigan State. And Thursday, more in the Big Ten, Minnesota travels to Wisconsin. We'd like to thank Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.